Well, yesterday, I went out and did my annual thing at the Town 3 basketball tournament, Living Hands History, and I was at least twice as old as anybody here. Yeah, young people, there's my team. I think one of the teams was dominating. We got beat them twice in that championship. Probably the best team out there. But we had them 10-1, I told Javen earlier. Had them 10-1 playing to 11, and we lost 12-10. We couldn't score that last basket for some reason, and we ended up losing that and didn't go to the championship. But anyway, that was my team. And you may notice that all of them are in their 20s, and I'm 65. And somebody took a picture of me out there taking a shot. So I got a little picture of playing. Now, there's an experiment that was done, or a class assignment, I guess it was, up in Chicago many years ago, where somebody decided to go around the people in the classroom and just compliment them. Tell them, you know, you're beautiful. You got a beautiful smile. And watch the reaction. See the four people mentioned there. When they're first told that, and then you see the reaction to them when they're told. And this whole thing went all the way through this whole series. You can find it on YouTube. Just look up the people being told they're beautiful or something like that. Look it up, and there's a video, about a five-minute video, showing all these people how they just beam when somebody tells them a compliment and says something nice to them. And how infrequent is that? Get that. Don't we love compliments? We all love compliments, don't we? Mark Twain said, I can live for 2 months on a good compliment. That's probably true. And somebody said, a compliment is verbal sunshine. Do you ever feel that way about it? Yeah. Somebody said, when you see something beautiful or good in someone, tell them. It may take seconds to say, but for them it could last a lifetime. You probably remember things that somebody said to you many, many years ago, don't you? Somebody said something nice to you. And also somebody said something mean to you. Those things just stick with you for years and years and years. And it's very inexpensive to give a compliment, isn't it? Doesn't cost you a thing. And yet, how stingy are we with the compliments and saying nice things to people? Anonymous compliments are the best because you know they aren't trying to gain anything from you. Somebody doesn't do it, you don't know who did it, then you have to... You know, the funny thing about when somebody does an anonymous kindness to you? Now you got to be nice to everybody because you don't know who's nice to you. You got to be nice to everybody. Well, that's probably a good idea anyway. No, there's lots of nice things you can say. I mean, think about a compliment getting like, talking to you is like a breath of fresh air. Wouldn't that make you feel good if somebody said that? Instead of take all the air out of the room? Yeah. You make the world more interesting. Those are the kind of things, saying something like that to somebody, if you're sincere about it, could really make somebody's day, couldn't it? But compliments can make us feel awkward. We don't know how to respond, do we? We get real nervous when somebody compliments. Oh, no, that's not, no, no. And we deny it and we reject it and that sort of thing. Somebody said we're prepared for insults, but compliments leave us baffled. We don't know what to do with them. This guy put something on the wall and said, take a compliment. And it says either keep it or pass it on. And it had the compliments on this piece of paper. You just pull one off and take it with you. That's an idea for somebody. You know, somebody says thank. So somebody gives you a compliment. What should you do? Say thank you. No use insulting them. No use making sure. That's something bad. Say thank you. Or say, that's kind, thank you, something like that. Now, there needs to be a balance between receiving compliments and glorifying God, though, isn't there? In Acts chapter 12, you may remember the story of Herod. He was angry with the people of Tyre and Sidon, and they came to him with one accord, and having persuaded Blastus, the king's chamberlain, they asked for peace because their country depended on the king's country for food. So they were kind of being flattering in an insincere way in order to get something for themselves, getting food. And... on an appointed day, Herod put on his royal robes and took a seat upon the throne and delivered an oration to them, his speech. And the people were shouting, oh, the voice of a God, not of a man. And immediately an angel of the Lord struck him down because he did not give God the glory. And he was eaten by worms and breathed his last. He received a compliment, really flattery he got. But he took honor for himself of being called a God. And God did not appreciate him not giving him the glory, did he? Remember Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount saying, beware of practicing your righteousness before men to be noticed by them, otherwise you have no reward from your Father who's in heaven. That's Matthew chapter 6, verse 1. Or he said also in chapter 5, verse 16, let your light shine before others so they may see your good works and do what? Give glory to your Father who's in heaven. God is the one that gets glory. So there's a balance between making sure we deflect everything toward God and give him the glory and receiving a compliment from somebody ourselves. There's a balance between those two things. And there's also a contrast, too, between compliments and flattery, too, isn't there? Is there a difference between those two? Somebody told me a story about, they said, and I, when I was preaching over at Tuscarora in Orlando, The people over there were just gushing with praise all the time. I loved over there. That was the most wonderful sermon. I didn't think it'd get any better, but this time you get even better than you did last week. The problem is you pat somebody in the back and their head swells, right? Well, I told him, I said, you know, it's kind of like eating chewing gum, eating bubble gum. You get the good out of it, but then you spit it out, you don't swallow it. You see? And I think that's what we got to do with compliments. Appreciate it, enjoy it, but then don't take it to heart, because people that compliment you can also condemn you later. So just chew it and then spit it out. So in the book of Proverbs, it talks about flattery. In Proverbs 2:16, it talks about to deliver you from the strange woman, even from the stranger, which flatters with her lips. Have women ever flattered men in order to get what they want and all that? Yeah, she flatters with her lips. Over in Proverbs 5, verse 3 and 4, talks about for the lips of the adulterous woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil, but in the end, she is bitter as gall, sharp as a double-edged sword. It doesn't turn out as well as you thought it would, does it? It can end up being a trap. Proverbs 7, verse 5, they will keep you from seducing woman, from the foreign woman with seductive speech, with flattering words. Talks about that. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 19 says, he that goeth about as a flatterer or talebearer reveals secrets. Therefore, meddle not with him that flatters with his lips. Don't hang around flatterers. Okay, that's our argument there in Proverbs. Somebody said flattery is saying something nice in order to help yourself. Encouragement is saying something true in order to help somebody else. What's your motivation? Are you trying to get something from the person, or are you trying to give something to them? I think that's Paul said in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 5, for neither at any time use we flattering words, as you know, nor a cloak of covetousness. God is witness. I swear to God, I've never used flattering words with you. Everything Paul said to them was sincere. And not only was Paul sincere in what he did, but you know, Jesus was always sincere too. Jesus never flattered anyone, did he? Jesus never used flattering words. In Matthew chapter 22, verse 16, we find the Herodians come in and they try to flatter Jesus. They say, "Teacher, we know you are true and teach the way of God truthfully, and you do not care about anyone's opinion, and you're not swayed by appearances." Matthew 22:16. Now, were they saying that sincerely? No. They were looking to trap him, weren't they? They were trying to butter him up so they could get him to say something they could use against him. That was flattery. But Jesus never flattered anybody. He always spoke the pure truth. He never had any hope of gain from what he said. He knows us, which is important, better than we know ourselves. And he never gave a misplaced compliment. So today I want to talk to you for a few minutes about being complimented by Jesus. You see, we all like compliments from each other, but wouldn't you love to have a compliment from Jesus? Wouldn't that be awesome? You see, the value of a compliment depends on who we receive it from. Imagine being complimented by Jesus coming up and giving you a compliment. You see, we can't fool him. He knows our hearts. He knows our minds. He knows everything about us, right? So we can fool people. We can't fool Jesus. And Jesus can read our mind and know our heart. So if he comes and gives a compliment, we know it's a true one. It's genuine. It's right. And we can look at some people, and we know his compliments are true and sincere. Let's look at some people that Jesus complimented and realize that if we do the same thing, we can receive the same honor. Now, Jesus never complimented people on their outward physical qualities, did he? But he did compliment them on spiritual inward qualities. And so that teaches us the things we need to know in order to please him, in order to go to heaven. So John chapter 2, verses 23 through 25 says that while he was in Jerusalem at the Passover feast, many people saw the miraculous signs he was doing and believed in his name, but Jesus would not entrust himself to them, for he knew all men. He did not need any man's testimony about man, for he knew what was in a man. Jesus knew people's hearts, knew their minds. He knew the reality, and you couldn't fool him or mock him. He knew the facts. So if he came and said something nice about you, you could just really take it to the bank and know it was genuine and sincere. So Jesus didn't flatter or give exaggeration. He gave compliments sparingly. He didn't gush with them and give them all the time. But he also, when he saw praiseworthy traits, he was quick to commend people in front of others. Let compliment a person and say, look, this is the kind of person you ought to be. This is the quality you ought to have in your life. So who did Jesus compliment? And why did he compliment them? Don't you think we ought to be curious about that? Should we be intensely interested in who did Jesus compliment and why did he compliment? What did he say about them? And then just look for the same traits in ourselves. So here, that's what we're doing here this morning. I'll start with great faith. Great faith was the first one I want to look at. And that comes from the Roman centurion in Matthew chapter 8, 5 through 13. This Roman centurion heard that Jesus had entered Capernaum, and he pled with him, saying, "Lord, my servant is lying at home paralyzed, dreadfully tormented." And Jesus said to him, I'll come and heal him. And the centurion said, "Lord, I'm not worthy that you should come under my roof, but only speak the word, and my servant will be healed. For I am also a man under authority, having soldiers under me. And I say to this one, go, and he goes, and to another, come, and he comes. And to my servant, do this, and he does it." When Jesus heard this, he marveled. And he said to those who followed him, "Assuredly, I say to you, I have not found such great faith, not even in Israel. I've got a Gentile coming over here, manifesting more faith than any Jew I've ever met." Which is the ones he should have been able to expect it from, right? "And I say to you, many will come from the east and the west and sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But the sons of the kingdom will be cast out in outer darkness. They'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Then Jesus said to the centurion, "Go your way. As you have believed, let it be done to you." And his servant was healed that same hour. Jesus said, "I've never met anybody with as great as faith as you have." Wouldn't that be a great compliment? Could Jesus come and say, "You've got great faith. I'm impressed. You got greater faith than I expected. More than I could really see from anybody else." That would be a great compliment, wouldn't it? Remember the woman with the issue of blood? There was one woman been bleeding for 12 years. Doctors couldn't help her, spent all of her money and did no good. And then she thought, if I could just touch the hem of Jesus' garment. A certain woman had a flow of blood for 12 years. She suffered many things from many physicians. She had spent all that she had and it was no better, but rather grew worse. And when she heard about Jesus, she came behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. And she said, if only I may touch his clothes, I shall be made well. I believe I could just touch him, I would get the healing I want. And immediately the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of the affliction. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that power had gone out of him, turned around in the crowd, and he said, "Who touched my clothes?" His disciples said to him, "You see the multitude thronging about you, and you say, who touched me? You know, this big crowd, what do you mean? Everybody's touching you." You know, and he looked around to see her who had done this thing, and the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction." Wow, your faith has made you well. And so that's so a few examples of great faith, people being complimented for that. And then great courage is another one. For that, I want to talk about John the Baptist just a minute. John the Baptist, Jesus said in Matthew 11, verse 11, "Truly I say to you, among them that are born of women, there has not risen a greater than John the Baptist." He's the greatest man ever born, Jesus said. That's quite a compliment, isn't it? The greatest man ever born? Now, why would Jesus say something like that about John the Baptist? A lot of reasons probably for it, but one of them had to do with his courage. You remember that he came and he rebuked Herod and Herodias for their incestuous marriage. And he went right to the powers and throne and with great courage corrected them, rebuked them for their sin. Let's read about that. Matthew chapter 11, beginning verse 7. "As they went away, Jesus began to speak to the crowds concerning John. He said, 'What do you go out to the wilderness to see? A reed shaken by the wind? What then do you go out to see? A man dressed in soft clothing? Behold, those who wear soft clothing are in kings' houses. What then did you go out to see? A prophet? Yes, I tell you, and more than a prophet.'" And over in Matthew chapter 14, beginning verse 1, "At that time Herod the Tetrarch heard the good news about Jesus, and he said to his servants, 'This is John the Baptist. He's risen from the dead. And that is why these miraculous powers are at work in him. For Herod had seized John and bound him and put him in prison for the sake of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife, because John had been saying to him, 'It's not lawful for you to have her.' And although he wanted to put him to death, he feared the multitude because they counted him as a prophet. But when Herod's birthday was celebrated, the daughter of Herodias danced before them and pleased Herod. Therefore, he promised with an oath to give to her whatever she wanted, one might ask. And so she, having been prompted by her mother, said, 'Give me John the Baptist's head here on a platter.' And although he was grieved, the king commanded it to be done because of his oaths and because of his dinner guests. And he sent and he had John beheaded in prison, and his head was brought on a platter and given to the girl, and she brought it to her mother. And his disciples came and took away the body and buried it, and they came and they reported to Jesus." You know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego went in the fiery furnace and came out alive. Daniel went in the lion's den and came out alive. John went to prison and got his head cut off. God doesn't promise to always rescue us from the trouble, does he? But he does promise to rescue us through the trouble. And he went on to see the Lord. Went on, as some would say, went on to the head office a little bit earlier. Went home to the kingdom. Well, Isaiah 30, verses 9 and 10. That there is a rebellious people, children, that will not hear the law of the Lord, which saith to the seers, see not unto the prophets, prophesy not unto us smooth things, prophesy deceits. Don't tell us the truth. Tell us what we want to hear, is what they would say. You know, it takes great courage to tell the truth, doesn't it? And it also takes even more courage to accept the truth when we hear it. John was willing to tell it, but Herod and Herodias were not willing to hear it. How about us? Are we have the courage to tell the truth? And do we have the courage to accept the truth when we hear it? Here's another thing to compliment. It's a great character. I'm looking at Nathanael in John chapter 1. Jesus is calling his first disciples here, beginning in verse 43. Read, the next day, Jesus decided to go to Galilee, and he found Philip and said to him, follow me. And Philip was from Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter. And Philip found Nathanael and said to him, we found him of whom the Moses and the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. We found the Messiah. We found the Christ, he says. Well, Nathanael says of him, can any good thing come out of Nazareth? Anything good come out of that? No, I don't think so. Well, Philip said to him, come and see. And so he came, and Jesus saw Nathanael coming toward him. And he said to him, here is truly an Israelite in whom is no deceit. That was quite a compliment. He said, here's a son of Jacob, the deceiver, the trickster, the one that was always fooling people and taking advantage of people. Here's somebody that's a descendant of Jacob who has no Jacob in him. He's totally sincere. There's no fabrication, no manipulation, none of that in him. He's genuine. He's sincere. What a great compliment he gave to him. And he said, where did you get to know me? How did you know that about me? And Jesus said, well, I saw you under the fig tree before Philip called you. And Nathanael answered and said, Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You're the King of Israel. And Jesus answered and said, because I said to you, I saw you under the fig tree, do you believe? You will see greater things than these. And he said to him, truly, truly, I say to you, you'll see heaven opened and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man. You see, what Nathanael had been meditating about under the tree was about Jacob's ladder going to heaven and angels up and down on it. And Jesus knew what he'd been studying and thinking about. That's why he was so impressed. Not the fact that he knew him, but he'd been studying Jacob and Jacob's ladder. And Jesus said, hey, I am Jacob's ladder. The angels ascend and descend upon me, you see. What about great humility? Great humility. How about the Syrophoenician woman, the Canaanite woman? Jesus and his disciples decide to go on a little rest and relaxation, get out of town for a little while, and they head on up to Phoenicia. And it says, behold, a Canaanite woman from that region came out and was crying, have mercy on me, O Lord, son of David. My daughter is severely oppressed by a demon. But he did not answer her a word, didn't talk to her, didn't answer her. How many people would say, well, if it's going to be that way about it, forget it, I'm out of here, right? No, she kept on. The disciples came and begged him, saying, send her away. She's crying out after us. She's bothering us. So Jesus wouldn't answer. Then the disciples say, get her out of here. We don't like her. Make her leave. And then he answered and said, I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. So he now insults her again. Can he get her to leave? No. Why? Where else is she going to go? Who else can help her besides you? If Jesus doesn't help her, she ain't going to get any help. And so she's willing to take insults. She's willing to humble herself regardless of what anybody says or does because she knows she needs from Jesus what only he can give. And so responding, he said, it's not a good thing to take the bread of the children and cast it to the dogs. Called her a dog. And she said, listen to her answer now. Yes, Lord, but the young dogs also eat from the crumbs that fall from the table of their masters. Heard somebody say one time, they said, there's no such thing as a 5-second rule when you have a 2-second dog. Right? They get the crumbs as soon as they fall off the table. They're ready waiting for them, right? Well, the dogs get to eat the crumbs that fall from the table. Well, then Jesus responding said to her, O woman, great is your faith. Let it be done to you just as you wish. And her daughter was healed from that very hour. Now here's Mark's account of that. He says, Jesus left the place and went to the vicinity of Tyre. He entered the house and did not want anybody to know it. Yet he could not keep his presence secret. So in fact, as soon as she heard about him, a woman whose little daughter was possessed by an evil spirit came and fell at his feet. And the woman was a Greek, born in Syrophoenicia. And she begged Jesus to drive the demon out of her daughter. And he said to her, first allow the sons to have their fill, for it's not good to take away the bread from the sons and throw it to the dogs. But she responded by saying to him, certainly, Lord, yet let the young dogs also eat under the table from the crumbs of the children. And he said to her, because of this saying, go, the demon is gone from your daughter. She went home to find her child lying on the bed, and the demon was gone. How much humility did that woman need in order to take the abuse she got, or perceived abuse she got? Ignored, pushed away, insulted, and all that. But where was she going? She says, Jesus, you have what I need. I need help for my daughter. You can say anything you want to. Treat me any way you want to. It doesn't matter. I'm still here for the duration because you've got what I need, and I'm not leaving until I get it. What great humility this woman had. And how about great sacrificial giving? If you think about the poor widow of Mark chapter 12, we all know that story, don't we? Beginning in verse 41. Jesus sat down opposite the place where the offerings are put and watched the crowd putting their money into the temple treasury, and many rich people threw in large amounts. And the poor widow came along and put two very small copper coins worth only a few cents. And calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, truly I tell you, this poor widow has put in more into the treasury than all the others. And they gave out of it, they gave out of their wealth, but she gave out of her poverty. She put in everything, all she had to live on. Jesus complimented the way he said, all those other people are putting in bags of money, she put in the copper coins, but you know what? She gave more than all the rest because she gave what she needed and not just her surplus. So Jesus praised her for great sacrificial giving. How about great gratitude? The thankful leper in Luke chapter 17, beginning verse 11. On his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. As he was going into the village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. And they stood at a distance and called out with a loud voice, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. And when he saw them, he said, go, show yourself to the priest. And as they went, they were cleansed. And one of them, when he saw that he was healed, came back praising God with a loud voice and threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. And Jesus asked, were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner? And then he said to him, rise and go. Your faith has made you well. 10 of them healed. One came back and said, thank you. Wow. Well, that's what he did. How about great love? Great love here in Luke chapter 7. The woman who washed the feet of Jesus. Luke chapter 7 begins verse 36. And when a woman who had lived a sinful life in that town learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, she brought an alabaster jar of perfume. And as she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. And she wiped them with her hair. And she kissed them and poured perfume on them. When the Pharisees who had invited him saw this, he said to him, if this man were a prophet, he would know who's touching him and what kind of woman that she is, that she's a sinner. Well, Jesus answered and said to him, Simon, I have something to say to you. And he answered and said, say it, teacher. Well, certain money lenders had two debtors, and one owed 500 denarii and another 50. And when they could not pay, he canceled the debt of both. Now, which of them will love him more? And Simon answered and said, well, I suppose the one for whom he canceled the larger debt. And he said to him, you judge rightly. And then he turned to the woman and said to Simon, do you see this woman? He never had seen that woman, had he? All he'd seen is a sinner. He didn't see the woman. Didn't pay attention to her. Do you see this woman? I entered your house and you gave me no water for my feet, but she has washed my feet with her tears and wiped them with the hair of her head. You gave me no kiss, but this woman has not ceased to kiss my feet since the time I came in. You did not anoint my head with oil, but this woman has anointed my feet with fragrant oil. Therefore I say to you, her sins, which are many, are forgiven her, for she loved much. But to whom little is given, the same loves little. So we have this woman who does an extravagant, outrageous thing in showing great love to Jesus that scandalized everybody else. But Jesus appreciated it, didn't he? Said she's the one that loves the most. She's the one that's got the greatest faith. And then you have great service. And we got the woman who anointed the feet of Jesus with precious ointment, which I think is Mary, there in John chapter 12. We'll look at it in Mark chapter 14. And while he was at Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, As he was reclining at table, a woman came with an alabaster flask of ointment of pure nard, very costly, and she broke the flask and poured it over his head. There were some who said to themselves indignantly, why was the ointment wasted like that? For this ointment could have been sold for more than 300 denarii and given to the poor. And they scolded her. But Jesus said, leave her alone. Why do you trouble her? She's done a beautiful thing for me. For you always have the poor with you, but whenever you want, you can do good for them. But you will not always have me. But she has done what she could and has anointed my body beforehand for burial. And truly I say to you, wherever the gospel is preached in the whole world, what she has done will be told in memory of her. Wow. He said she has done what she could. Isn't that great? Have you done what you could? We all have different things we can do, but have you done what you could? Now, I'll end here today with Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever, isn't he? So if he saw these traits in these people back in the New Testament and thought they were praiseworthy and worthy of compliments, might he also find them praiseworthy and worthy of compliment today if he saw them in us? So would Jesus compliment you? And if so, for what? How about great faith, courage, character, humility, giving, gratitude, love, and service? What about all those? Could he compliment you for any of those? Could he compliment you for all of those? I hope you're working on those things so that if Jesus saw you, he'd say, that's one of those people manifesting that characteristic. What's the greatest compliment you've ever received? Think about that for a minute, the greatest compliment you've ever received. Could there be a greater one than receiving the one that says, well done, good and faithful servant? Enter the joys of thy Lord. Wouldn't that be a great one? Matthew chapter 25, verse 21. Or what God said to Jesus, his son, he said, this is my son whom I love, with him I am well pleased. Wouldn't you love to hear the Father say to you, I'm well pleased with you? Wouldn't that be a great compliment to receive? And to kind of flip the coin real quickly, this is last slide. How generous are you in complimenting and praising Jesus? We all want to be complimented and praised by him, but how generous are we in noticing his characteristics and his qualities that are worthy of recognition and compliments and praise? How generous are we in noticing these things and saying them to him? Just like you like to be complimented, God likes to be complimented. He wants to be praised. He wants to be honored. He wants you to recognize who he is and what he's done and to thank him for it. I hope that's what you're doing. Let's not worry about so much about praise from each other, although it's nice to get a compliment from time to time. But let's mostly focus on Jesus complimenting us and how we can turn around and praise and compliment him. The song we're going to sing for the invitation is Victory in Jesus. If you're subject to the invitation and need to obey the gospel, we'd love to assist you and help you with it and let the need be known as we sing the song announced. Hold on, storm.